This is Take Care, a health and wellness show produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Catherine Loper. The relationship between mental health and incarceration is sometimes complicated. Having a mental health diagnosis before incarceration is problematic, but so is being in jail to begin with. Inmates can develop mental health problems over time, especially in larger prisons or where solitary confinement is used. Tim Edgman is a doctoral student in the Department of Sociology at the University of Georgia, where his research focus is the impact of the criminal justice system on physical and mental health. Here's co-host Jason Smith with the interview.
Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's pretty easy to make assumptions about why people in jail or prison might experience mental health issues. I mean, jail's not a fun place to be, and people might have mental health issues before they go into jail, but I'm assuming it's much more complicated than that. What are some of the factors you've found in your research that contribute to poor mental health among inmates?
Well, you're absolutely right. When I tell people about the research that I'm doing, you know, inmate mental health or incarcerated persons with mental health, the answer is, well, of course, you know, people have poor mental health. They're in prison, right? It's not a fun place to be at all. Prisons themselves, we don't construct them to be vacations, right? They're meant to be depriving environments. That's part of the punishment angle of prison. So it shouldn't be surprising that people have difficulty when they go into prison. But what we wanted to show in this paper and what other scholars have been showing as well is that there are different ways that prisons can impact mental health that we don't necessarily fully understand. So it isn't the case that prisons are monolithic institutions, that each prison is the same. They're actually very different, and the ways that they're different matter for how they impact someone's mental health. So for example, when a prison is overcrowded, it can negatively impact someone's depression versus if the prison is not overcrowded, or the level at which visitation is allowed in the prison, or the activities that the prison offers, such as recreational activities, exercise, even television. So all of these things can matter for how an inmate experiences prison. And that's sort of what we were trying to show in this paper, the various ways that prisons can impact mental health above and beyond those sort of individual characteristics, which you noted as well, that we know history of victimization, a history of abuse, being homeless, all of these things also matter for mental health. But the purpose of this paper was to try to control all of that out, to sort of put that to the side, if you will, and focus on, well, how do prisons themselves, how do their structural elements affect the mental health of people incarcerated there?
There are different types of facilities. There are smaller local jails. There are minimum security prisons. Then you have the medium and maximum security prisons, and then the supermax prisons where the most dangerous inmates are held. Did your research show a difference in the mental health of inmates in these different types of facilities?
So that's a great question. We, in this paper, we only focus on prisons. So we don't focus on jails, which are a separate entity. In the paper, we did control for security levels. So we looked at the differences between minimum security prisons and all other prisons, because that's really where the difference seems to lie. Minimum security prisons are less depriving than medium and maximum security prisons. And so the regimes of these prisons, the higher the security level, the more depriving the environment seems to be. So we did try to account for that effect. But it's a bit difficult to do that with the data that we have, because all we can really say is that, okay, this is a minimum security prison, this is a maximum security prison, but there's not a whole lot of nuance between what inmates experience in those prisons, at least with the available data. And then supermax prisons, we don't have a whole lot of data on, although I will note that it's not necessarily the worst of the worst that get put into supermax prisons. In fact, in many cases, it is inmates that are difficult to handle that may be placed in super maximum confinement.
Is there a correlation that you found between people who spend more time in prison and their mental health? So would an inmate's mental health deteriorate the longer that they spend in prison?
So we did find a correlation between length of sentence, or the amount of time that a person has spent being incarcerated, and poor mental health. It wasn't a big enough effect to talk about in the paper. Again, it's really the limitations of data. But I will say that other scholars have found that, yes, indeed, it does seem to be the case that the longer someone spends in prison and the longer someone spends in a particularly deprived environment. So if a person spends a lot of time in an overcrowded facility, or particularly if a person spends a lot of time in solitary confinement, that does have a negative impact on mental health, or that seems to be the case.
Did you also look into demographics? Are there certain ages or races that are at higher risk for mental health problems in prison?
Yes. So we did control for some demographic factors. We included those in our analysis. And the demographic factors tend to align with the demographic factors in the general population. So what we would expect to happen in the general population is also happening in prison. So, for example, as someone ages, their depression decreases. And that's true for a general population, right? As people get older, they tend to have less depression to a point. And we found that same trend in prison. It's also the case that white individuals tend to have worse mental health than black individuals. We found a bit of a difference there in our data, but it's not enough to really justify and say, oh, look at this huge difference. We found things like having a history of physical or sexual abuse prior to incarceration does increase someone's depression as well. So we did have some of those demographic factors in there. Again, trying to account for how those affect mental health and putting those aside and trying to see, okay, with all of these demographic factors that we know affect depression, do the factors of the prison, do those elements of the prison still have an effect? And we found that they do.
There's a large push right now, especially here in New York State, to end the use of solitary confinement in prisons, with many people saying it's inhumane. And I have to assume, and you mentioned this, that inmates kept for long periods in solitary, it has to have a large impact on their mental health.
Yes. And the literature on that is a bit scarce because it's difficult, as you may imagine, to do a long-term study of people who are in solitary confinement. It's very difficult, I mean, to get access to that population. So what you sort of have to rely on are official prison reports, or you have to try and catch people after they are released from prison and have been in solitary confinement for a long period of time to try and see how it's affected them. But from what we can tell, being in solitary confinement, experiencing that extreme deprivation of social contact, does seem to negatively affect the person, really in all assets, not just depression, but really it kind of destroys their hope for the future. What a lot of activists and reformers are sort of saying is that, look, we have these people in prison who have been put into solitary confinement. You know, they're put in the cell for 23 hours a day. They don't have any social contact. They're not allowed visitation. And they may be kept there for an indefinite number of years. And so let's say that someone serves a prison sentence of 5 years and they're put into solitary confinement for whatever reason. They could spend however long in solitary confinement and then they're released. And so we have to question ourselves, well, can we house someone in solitary confinement for years on end and then release them into the general population and expect them to fare decently? Or do we expect them to go right back to prison?
The idea of jail or prison is it's a form of rehabilitation. You commit a crime, you serve your punishment, and ideally you would be released back into society. But that has to be difficult for an inmate with poor mental health while they're in prison. Does it make it harder for them once they're released?
That does seem to be the case. Most research suggests that people who have poor mental health on release are more likely to go back to prison than people who do not have poor mental health. So it definitely does seem to be the case that this particular population is at more risk of recidivating, going back to prison, than someone without the mental health problems.
In your paper, the research only looked into male inmates. Why is that?
That's a great question. The reason for that is the sample that we have had more men in it than women. But the real reason is that trying to combine male and female inmates into the same paper gets a bit tricky with this limited cross-sectional data, because we know that there are real differences between male prisons and female prisons, so much so that trying to compare them with just one variable of the difference between men and women doesn't really work. That is, we can't get at the differences between how men experience prison and how women experience prison in this paper. However, we are right now working on a paper with the sample of women and looking at the same things that we looked at in this paper on men and sort of seeing if the same deprivations have an effect on women's mental health. And I can tell you the main thing that we found with this sample of women that we're analyzing is that visitation really seems to matter a lot. It didn't matter so much for the men, but lacking access to visitation for women seems to have a very negative effect on their mental health.
I know we're talking for the most part about the mental health of inmates in prisons, but have you come across any data as to how people who work in prisons are affected? I would imagine it can't be easy for a prison guard in that type of environment either, even though, you know, they get to go home at the end of the day, but it has to be a difficult environment for them as well.
Absolutely. And that's one thing in the future that I really want to focus on is how are correctional officers handling this environment? How does a correctional officer feel when they know that the people in their care have these mental health problems and they can't help them? So there isn't an incredible amount of research on this, again, because it's a difficult population to gain access to. But there have been some studies done on correctional officers. One particularly famous study in my field is the work by a scholar named Dana Britton. And from what we can tell, there is a very high burnout among correctional officers. It's one of the top professions where people quit within the first 2 to 3 years. So it does seem to be a very difficult environment for the correctional officers. Compounded on top of that is that correctional officers are generally seen as lesser in the criminal justice system, right? So you have police officers. You know, everyone wants to be a police officer. Kids grow up like, oh, I want to be a police officer, right? But no one really wants to grow up and be a correctional officer. Not only is it difficult for correctional officers to deal with these depriving environments, it's also difficult because they don't have a lot of occupational prestige to go along with it.
Is there anything being done right now that you know of to address this? Are there states providing more funding to prisons for more mental health treatment for inmates?
There are states that provide more funding for mental health services in prisons, but there are states that provide less funding for it. And so states like South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Georgia, Florida, these states seem to have the worst funding for mental health services. So the problem with this topic is that it does vary a lot by state, and it varies a lot by prison as well. And the thing that you run into when you talk about providing mental health services for prisons is that there's a combat between punishing people and helping people, right? So prisons exist for punishment, and we want to do that as prisons. That's sort of the ethos, right? We want to punish people as a prison, but we also want to care for them and rehabilitate them. And the ways in which you do that can often conflict, right? So how much treatment do you provide for someone? How do you still ensure that they are being punished? Is that your goal at all? So some states see their goal more as punishment, whereas some states might see their goal more as rehabilitation. And the way in which that doctrine varies has a very large impact on how people experience prison.
Is there something or a number of things that you can think of based on your research that you think might help improve the situation, help improve the mental health of inmates? Is it as simple as more mental health counseling or giving them more amenities like more television time?
So there's a question of how you want to go about it. So if you're looking at sort of my research and the sort of deprivation research, understanding that prisons themselves might cause mental health problems, right, above and beyond the sort of individual factors. And so if you want to try and prevent the mental health problems that prisons can cause, then yes, you should look at something like increasing the amount of activities that the prison offers or increasing the work assignments that the prison offers or increasing access to those. If you want to go, you know, a more expensive sort of solution to that, you need to increase the number of beds in the prison to prevent overcrowding, or you need to build new prisons, which, again, is a whole other thing that maybe we don't want to do that. If you want to try and combat the effect that prisons are having, then those might be your options, or increasing access to visitation. But if you want to combat the mental health of people coming into prison, right, so we incarcerate people who have mental health problems, they are placed into prison, then you will need to not only solve those structural issues, which may work to increase negative mental health, but you will also need to provide things like more therapy or if you want to do, you know, psychotropic medication, right? So you could provide more access to medication, more access to cognitive behavioral therapy. All of those are viable options. But the real problem here is that you can try and solve the mental health of inmates through things like therapy and increased medication or increased treatment. And that's something we should probably think about doing. But you also need to think about the long term. So mental health isn't necessarily like a cold. It isn't something that you get and you can cure and then, okay, you're fine. You can leave now and you'll be okay. We have to think of it more in terms of what happens to the person after they're released, right? So they have all of this therapy in prison, and then they're released into the same environment where they came from. They can't afford medication. They can't afford the treatment. So what happens to them? So not only do we need to work in offering more mental health services in the prison, but we also need to consider doing other things like combating homelessness or unemployment or all of these factors that we know also are influencing the mental health of the people in prison.
Tim, thank you very much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.